You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Locked On Vikings, Locked On Podcast Network. Sam, Sage on the show, episode 306. Sage, good morning to you, my friend.
Good morning. Looking forward to seeing how practice goes today, seeing what the injury report is for both teams, both the Vikings and Washington, and looking forward to the game this Sunday.
Yeah, speaking of injury reports, Washington's is extensive, and we've seen a lot of these this year with the Vikings' opponent. Washington has about 10 to 12 guys that are on IR, and then another 15 or so that have some kind of injury. And it's especially been evident on that offensive line. It's interesting. There's actually a Burnsville alum, a rookie center for Washington. His name is Chase Roullier. We actually played a snippet of audio from him over the spring before the draft because he was from here. And he's actually played all of the last two games for Washington. So they're really banged up on the offensive line. Kirk Cousins hasn't had much time to throw, just like every team. It's how healthy you can stay at this point in the season. And right now, Washington is really battling the injury bug.
Yeah, football is a brutal game. And as the season goes on, some teams seem to get hit worse than the others. I mean, there's a lot of hard work and things that go into football, but sometimes there is just luck. And a lot of times that luck is the bounce of a ball, and sometimes it's injuries. Washington has been unlucky with injuries. They had three offensive linemen miss last Sunday's game. Despite that, the Redskins had probably their biggest win of the season going to Seattle, and maybe one of the sort of bigger wins of Kirk Cousins's, you know, sort of resume, in particular this year as he's trying to get that huge monster contract, is to go into Seattle and, you know, without three offensive linemen, without, I believe, one or so, or maybe even two wide receivers. Their tight end, Jordan Reed, was out in that football game. Just a ton of injuries. Washington came away with a win. So their offense didn't play great. They made sort of the key play there at the end of the game, a long throw for a touchdown or near touchdown. But their defense played very well, obviously, holding Seattle to only 14 points.
Here's how much they're hurting at wide receiver. So their leading receiver is their running back, Chris Thompson. He leads them in rushing yards. He leads them in receiving yards. Their number two pass catcher is Vernon Davis, who is a tight end. So Jamison Crowder is their leading receiver in yards, but he's third on the team in yardage with 272 yards.
And who makes the most money is Terrell Pryor, who hasn't done very much this year.
Exactly. And Jordan Reed has also had a quiet season.
Yeah, he missed last game as well, I believe. I'm not sure what his injury is, and I'm not sure if he's expected to play this week again. So, yeah, that team ravaged by injuries, but yet somehow they came out with the win. Washington's a good football team. I mean, they were right in the mix last year. You know, I can see them being right in the hunt for a playoff spot this year in that NFC East, a very good division, really, other than the Giants. The other two teams are probably two of the best teams in the NFC. So Washington is just sort of right behind them. And you're trying to stay in the mix. This is an absolutely huge game for them this Sunday.
Yeah, it looks like Jordan Reed is a hamstring injury, by the way. Washington played Minnesota last year and beat them. That was the end of the Vikings' four-game losing streak after the bye when they went to Washington. They took a lead before halftime, and then they didn't score in the second half as Washington just field-goaled them to death. But Washington's probably been one of the most unpredictable teams this year. They get out of the gate, they lose to Philadelphia. Certainly no shame in that. Then they go and they beat the Rams on the road, one of the few teams to actually beat Los Angeles this year. They beat Oakland. They almost beat Kansas City. And then they barely sneak by San Francisco. Then they go and they lose to Philadelphia again. They lose to Dallas and a shocking bounce back win at Seattle to put them right at 4-4. So Washington, probably with that win against Seattle, instead of being on a three-game losing streak coming in, now they're suddenly feeling like, hey, we can get back over 500. You know, we can make a run at this thing in the second half of the season, maybe snag a wild card. It's tough to know, though, what exactly you're going to get. You know, this is a team that's not great at any one thing. They're kind of average all the way through in their offensive stats and their defensive stats. And it's almost scarier to face a team where you don't know what you're going to get rather than a team where you kind of know exactly what you're going to get, isn't it?
Yeah, well, there's one of those teams where it feels like they could be a sort of a 7-9 or 6-10 team, or a 9-7 and 10-6 team. You know, it just, you know, 2, 3, 4 games, you know, will make or break this season. They're not a terrible football team, and they're not great, obviously. So they play in that tough division. Any team that goes to Seattle and wins on the road in Seattle against Russell Wilson is a quality ball club. So the Vikings are going to have to play, you know, really good football. They're going to have to, you know, run the ball, which I think that, say, Seattle, you know, didn't run the ball great in that last game, had to throw it a lot. So it'd be nice if the Vikings can try to control that line of scrimmage, run the football, take some pressure off Case Keenum, and but they're going to have to play, you know, mistake-free football, play well. If they don't play well, Washington is a very quality team that can win this game.
What kind of football town is Washington? Do you think the Redskins are the number one show in town ahead of the Nationals and the Capitals and the Wizards? Is it basically Redskins and then a huge gap to the rest?
Yeah, so it's changed a lot. You know, I was drafted by Washington back in 2001 with Marty Schottenheimer. When I got to the team, and of course, growing up in Iowa, you don't know a ton about the NFL, but in particular, the teams far away, like the East Coast, like Washington, and you know, it sort of came to find they were the number one team in the country as far as popularity and as far as value of their franchise that Dan Snyder, you know, had bought, and so. They have a huge fan following. You know, they really do stretch from, you know, obviously up to Baltimore, which is only about 40 minutes north of Washington, but, you know, into West Virginia, probably parts of Pennsylvania like Harrisburg, and then all the way down. I mean, I realized there wasn't the Carolina Panthers for a long time, so Washington fans used to go all the way down really to Atlanta. They really did sort of hold that entire, you know, part of the country. Shoot, even, you know, Nashville wasn't there. Until, you know, obviously in the early 2000s or whatever. So, you know, even that, you know, they probably had a lot of, you know, Tennessee and Kentucky also as Washington fans. They had sort of a huge mid-Atlantic portion of the country. So it's been a really interesting franchise. I mean, shoot, I think 3 years after I left almost, it seemed like almost nobody was there as far as public relations people or, you know, video guys or, the trainers, it's constant turnover in a Daniel Snyder type of organization. There, I know their equipment guys have stayed, you know, pretty much the same the entire time. But it's been an organization that since Dan Snyder has bought it, has not been consistent. He's made a lot of mistakes. He goes on, he used to spend a ton of money. Doesn't seem to do that nearly as much, anymore, but it's a franchise still trying to get, you know, back to the glory days of, the 80s and early 90s.
Do you hold them close to your heart, though, because they are the team that drafted you?
No, okay. I really don't. I think a lot of guys do have that feeling, but I guess I just sort of don't. I'm not even really sure if I root for them. I feel like I root for almost all my former teams, you know, whether it's the Vikings or the Giants or the Texans in particular, you know, even the Dolphins. I think I root for them. I don't know. I don't seem to really care to them all much about the Redskins, you know, so much. It probably, you know, starts with their owner. I wasn't a big fan. I can't say anything bad about him, but I wasn't a big fan because the people that I did respect didn't seem to have very good relationships with him.
Do you get the sense that the fan base of Washington has been a little divided by the whole nickname debate, or is that more of a conversation for outside of the city to have?
I think it's more of a national conversation than a local. I think they just accepted that's their team, that's their team name, and probably most prefer to not to change. Washington fans, they were when I first got there, you know, Snyder had only owned the team for about two years, maybe 3 years. They had gone to a playoff game. The next year they didn't, and that's when North Turner got fired, and that's where they hired Marty Schottenheimer, who drafted me. But at that time, I mean, you know, Washington fans were extremely loyal. They absolutely loved their football team. I feel like that has subsided a lot. You know, the people I know in Washington, they just have been so frustrated, you know, for the last 19 years or 18 years since Dan Snyder bought the football team. There's been so many mistakes that have been made. So much sort of PR nightmares, it seems like, and just the way Dan has treated the fans. I mean, the fans really got nickel and dimed, and probably still get nickel and dimed. But you know, the PSLs, those licenses, they were one of the first teams to do it, and they were just numbers because Washington fans are so loyal, and Dan Snyder knew that he could sell those licenses and try to make as much money as possible, be a paid outrageous prices for parking way out there in Landover, Maryland, sort of in the middle of nowhere. I think the fans just sort of got tired of, you know, just getting nickel and dimed all the time.
Vikings related news. Chris Mortensen tweeted very late last night. Vikings QB Sam Bradford did have his left knee scoped Tuesday by Dr. James Andrews, who cleaned up the knee in hopes of easing pain and discomfort, sources said. Team decision still pending on IR. Now, for all I know, the decision could come down before we were done recording here with the team making a roster move, activating Teddy Bridgewater, and perhaps IRing Sam Bradford and ending his season. How disappointing for Sam Bradford, as it looks increasingly more like he may not play again this season. What do you think this means for his career?
Well, it's not good. I can see his career, you know, to be honest, I can see his career starting to wind down a little bit. He just never sort of reached those expectations that he was hoping for. He had probably the best game of his career, that first game of the year against the Saints, and in sort of classic Vikings fashion, you know, that might be the last game he ever plays. So I don't think teams, you know, by his work the last couple of years in Minnesota, coming off the knee issues, I don't know if teams would be interested in, you know, paying him $20 million to start anymore. I'm not even sure if teams are willing to pay him $10 million to start. He might be relegated to a spot where he's sort of competing with a team that doesn't have a good quarterback, or just as a backup role, and I'm not sure how much he wants to be in that role. You know, he's made so much money. He's made about $130 million in his career. So the future is a huge unknown for Sam Bradford, and obviously it's an unknown for the Vikings as well.
Yeah, and some of my reporting colleagues were saying last week over at Winter Park that the Vikings' discipline and Rick Spielman's decision to not extend Sam Bradford in the offseason might be one of his greatest non-moves ever, because there was, I'm sure, a lot of temptation to lock him down, give him some guaranteed money. He probably would have commanded eight figures per year, and they didn't do that. And maybe they saw this coming. Who knows what kind of intel they had, but suddenly they're sort of liberated now to have flexibility this offseason. It's looking increasingly more now like it's, you know, between Keenum and Bridgewater, and Bradford might not be in the fold here. There is seemingly, and this is interesting because they're playing Washington this week, is that there's a very small chunk of people that are rooting not for Bridgewater, not for Bradford, not for Keenum, but some people are saying go get Kirk Cousins this offseason. He's not under contract next year. Is that a scenario that you might entertain if you're a Vikings front office guy?
Well, I think right now, obviously I think Bradford's going to be gone. I think one of the main reasons that he wasn't extended this offseason was the fact that Teddy Bridgewater was probably going to come back from his injury and probably be fine, which I think he will be, you know, in the coming weeks or months or next year or whatever that might be. I think that was part of the reason he had other options that he probably felt decent about. If not, you sort of start over with, you know, with the draft. I think going after Kirk Cousins is going to be a challenge for almost any team. And here's why. I think he's making 20, I think he made $20 million last year. He's going to make $25 million this year. And there's this rule, if you get a franchise like a third time or something, that he get like a 40% increase. So his salary next year is like $35 million if he gets franchised again. That is his sort of leverage with any team that wants to negotiate with him, or if Washington wants to negotiate with him, is you're going to have to pay me $35 million in the first year. So you're talking about the first 2 years of a deal, probably something like $70 million guaranteed in the first 2 years of a contract. So he has played his cards. He's bet on himself. He's going to get a huge payday. He should get a huge payday. It doesn't really matter if he's better than Aaron Rodgers or if he's better than Tom Brady or better than Matt Stafford. It doesn't matter. It's all about leverage and timing. And then that's you know, he has everything on his side when it comes time to negotiate once the season is over.
If you're healthy and if you're fairly consistent in this league, you don't need to be top 10 to get paid. And Sam Bradford was almost another great example of that, in that if he had stayed healthy this year, he would have gotten paid big, big money. That'll be a fascinating thing to watch, as will the injury report, which comes out later today for the Minnesota Vikings. So obviously we're watching for the activation of Teddy. We're watching for the health of their offensive line, watching for the health of Diggs, of Floyd, and we'll see if everybody's back for the Vikes. I think that Mike Zimmer's probably hopeful that they are. Lastly, let's just do a quick pick for Thursday night's game. Seattle trying to bounce back from their loss. They are at Arizona. Arizona 4-4, Seattle 5-3, and they're both chasing the Rams. So that's a big game for both clubs. Seattle's favored by 6 on the road. What do you think?
Well, it's interesting. Arizona's one of those teams that I wrote off really early in the year. I just didn't like what they were. It didn't seem like they were very good. Carson Palmer wasn't playing great. They didn't have much of a running game because of their running back Johnson was out for the year with an injury. But they signed Adrian Peterson, and it's just happens to be the perfect fit. It's amazing that the Saints signed him first, who he was a terrible fit for, obviously with the trade to Arizona, now he's a perfect fit for. But he has really revitalized that team. So if he can run the football, you know, 30 some times a game for 150 yards, man, I like Arizona, you know, in this game. Having said that, I don't see him running for 150 yards against Seattle's defense. They're not what they used to be, but still, I would say a top 10 defense, still a very good defense, with a good front seven and a great secondary. And so I like Seattle in this game, whether even if it's played in Seattle or whether it's played in Arizona.
Yep, I like Seattle as well. I just think their quarterback's much, much better. And look at the Arizona wins this year. They beat Indianapolis in overtime. They beat San Francisco in overtime. They beat the Bucks by 5, and they beat the 49ers again. So that would be, let's see, a combined 5 wins between all the teams that they've beaten, and 2 of them in overtime. So I don't like the Cardinals that much. I mean, they're staying afloat here at 4-4, but without Carson Palmer, I just can't pick them here against, I think, a superior Seattle team. So we're both.
I'm gonna go with 80% Seattle in this game. I feel pretty good about it.
You know what? I'll up mine to 90. I'll go 90 just to put a little more skin in it. That's the show for the day, the 306th edition of Locked On Vikings. Sam and Sage, and we'll be back with you on Friday for final thoughts on Vikings and Redskins. Talk to you then, Sage.
Sounds good.
For a chance at a Pro Football Focus subscription, leave an iTunes review with your Twitter handle to get in the running.